The following program was paid for by sponsors of Weinstein Plastic Surgery. The views and opinions expressed are not those of the staff and management of WMTR. As always, it is advisable to consult a physician before making a major medical decision. Welcome to Nip and Tuck with Doc Weinstein. Doc Weinstein is a recognized expert of cosmetic and aesthetic plastic surgery, facial rejuvenation, and breast and body contouring with an office in Chester, New Jersey. Now, here's the host of Nip and Tuck, Dr. Weinstein.
Good evening. Here we are, Nip and Tuck and WMTR Radio. You can call in with any questions about plastic surgery, nips and tucks, at 973-267-9687. I'm here with a very prestigious colleague of mine, Dr. Albert E. Coe, MD, plastic surgeon, and chief of our section of plastic surgery at Morristown Medical Center. And he has become chief out of his filling of civic duty to the hospital and the community, and has been available for emergencies and reconstructive surgery, cosmetic surgery here at his 95 Madison Avenue office. And welcome to our show, Dr. Coe.
Thank you, Larry. Thanks for having me. Yeah. Appreciate it.
So I know you have a specialty in plastic surgery, as I do, and you trained in Drexel University as well as University of Massachusetts hospitals. And you have pretty extensive experience with breast reconstruction.
Yeah, I would say that's probably the one area that I really enjoy, and as perhaps my wheelhouse, you know. But the great thing about plastic surgery, as you know, is we're really true general surgeons. We do a little bit of everything.
You're a general surgeon trained completely, and you have general surgery boards as well?
Correct.
Yeah, I forewent that. I really did surgical oncology at Sloan Kettering, and that's where I was exposed to most of my reconstructive surgery. I spent a year and a half at Cornell University at Sloan Kettering doing extensive breast reconstruction. I actually was involved with the first tissue expander use at Sloan Kettering with Dr. Kovachev, and it really made a huge difference. I mean, tissue expanders are little balloons that we can put under the skin for breast reconstruction, and what it does is expands the amount of skin that we have, and there's an actual net increase in the skin and in the vessels and in the tissue. And people were thinking it's just secondary only to stretch, but we did some extensive research when I was at University of Pittsburgh, and we found that it actually increases the vasculature of the nerves, as well as actually prevents tumor growth and metastases in an animal model. So that was one of the researches I did because I was so whacked out about using these things in humans and wanted to know what their effects were.
Yeah, you could imagine the first time a surgeon thought of it. I imagine he may have seen a pregnant woman's belly or perhaps a benign tumor on a person that was quite large. And when they removed it, they realized they had extra skin. So that was probably one of the origins for coming up with that idea. And, of course, it's still a great way to perform a breast reconstruction.
Yeah, I had a kid who was sponsored by the Rotary Club at Chester who had a huge hemangioma on her back. And I was able to put a tissue expander in, expand it up her tissue in the back, and I took out that huge hemangioma, which was about 15% of her back, and was able to do it in a two-stage procedure. And at that time, Morristown was really helpful because they allowed this very poor child from Guatemala to stay in the hospital several days. And the mom was so thankful that we were able to take care of her.
Yeah, I had a similar case, a charity case like that, up at Cambridge Hospital in Massachusetts, where I originally went into practice. And it was a young male who had burned his scalp. And approximately 50% of his scalp was just scar tissue. They had no formal treatment, not even skin grafting. They just let it heal, and it was a terrible scar. And I actually expanded him twice. And as you know, the interesting thing about the scalp is you can expand it, and the follicles can be 50% apart, but it'll look like there's no loss of hair.
Yeah, I tell you, it's amazing. I think that was one of the primary things that Ketamar Radovan really started using the tissue expanders for when he first introduced it. He was from University of Michigan. And Ketamar really was really interesting guy who spent a great deal of time using the tissue expanders in multiple occasions. I actually used tissue expanders from head to toe as well, and I presented that at the Australasian Society some years ago in Australia. It was a great meeting,
fantastic.
I'll tell you. I took my whole family, and we really loved going to the land down under. They had some great shrimp on the barbie there.
Yeah, that's great. And it's, again, it reminds me that as a plastic surgeons, we have so many tools we can use, and that's just one. And I'll bet most plastic surgeons there haven't used one in over, you know, 3 or 4 years. But when you get the right candidate for it, it's a fantastic tool. There's a lot of education, as you know, that goes in with it. Those patients have to be educated. They're in your office every week. It is a prolonged process. You really get to know your patients, and they know you. You know, you almost look forward to seeing some of them because you know you're heading towards the final result, which is going to be, you know, ultimately a great result.
I had one patient who came to me from Columbus, Ohio, who suffered from a bomb blast injury. Apparently, she lived right near University of Ohio, and she was walking around, and she found a large metal object that was holding the fraternity door open. And then she was carrying it. Apparently, this was a mine that was stolen from the local ROTC, and the kids had just taken it and used it for a doorstop. And she unfortunately triggered the mine on her chest, and she lost her entire chest, abdomen, and neck. And the parents were really fit to be tied. They didn't know what to do. They had skin grafted her, and she had completely lost her chest. And I had extensive experience with the tissue expanders and breast reconstruction at the time. And they brought, he was working on the Columbia Gas Line. I don't know if you've ever biked on the Columbia Gas Trail, the Columbia Trail out by Schooley's Mountain. So if you go up Schooley's Mountain, there's a trail there. It's one of the most beautiful trails in New Jersey for biking or hiking. And they were working on this Columbia gas pipeline. And he ended up bringing his daughter to me, and I worked on her at Morristown and at Hackettstown at the time. And I was able to expand her stomach, so that I was able to completely remove the scarred stomach, completely remove the scarred breasts, and reconstructed her. And they were so thrilled with the work I was able to do for her. And it's, you know, I put the largest tissue expander ever made at the time in her, and I expanded her entire back and flank and just moved it across. And I haven't done, I had another woman, you know, who also was lit aflame by a man who fell in love with her. And she was Indian, and he was in love with her, and she didn't want any part of him, even though he was taking classes that she was taking. And then he took gasoline, poured it on her, and lit her whole body aflame.
Oh, goodness.
So she woke up in the St. Barnabas burn unit and saw him and almost, like, freaked out. Right. Because here was this guy who almost tried to kill her, and then I ended up doing a similar process for her, reconstructing her breasts and her tummy and her neck, and I'll never forget her. She was a really sweet woman. And
it's funny how you can think back to certain cases and patients, and it is, again, part of the appeal of the specialty, that it can be so satisfying to take care of these folks.
I tell you, when Dr. P.O. first came out to work in the area, he worked with me for 5 years. And during that period of time, I pretty well transitioned to cosmetic surgery, where I do almost exclusively cosmetic surgery, and I'll take on reconstructive surgeries as I see fit, that I feel fits into my practice, or is something I feel that I can significantly help with. But I guess by transitioning to the cosmetic side and not being in any insurance plans per se, you know, I do mostly, you know, breast cosmetic work and facelifts and eyelids. Mm-hmm. That's what I was doing this morning, one with eyelids.
Yes.
I know you've done quite a few tummy tucks over the years, and I know quite a few patients that you've had who were very pleased with the results that you were able to obtain for them.
Yeah, you know, that's one of those procedures, tummy tuck or abdominoplasty, as we say, that you know the result you're going to get. You know, sometimes with some of the other cases in cosmetic work we do, you have an idea, you have a vision of what it's going to look like, but with abdominoplasty, and once you've done, you know, a few hundred, you just know based on the patient's body habitus, their size, their weight, how far apart their muscles have stretched, the skin tone and quality, you know the result you're going to get. So therefore, you don't have to sort of oversell it to them. You know what you can do with what they're presenting with. And, you know, I think that's a great challenge of cosmetic surgery is, you know, making sure that patients have correct expectations. When the expectations don't match up with what their starting point is or what as we can do as surgeons, that's when you can get into trouble. So I think, as you know, you turn away probably, you know, 3 or 4 out of 10 patients who come to your office seeking cosmetic surgery because they're not good candidates or, although somewhat unusual but not out of the ordinary, they have totally unrealistic expectations. And that is best managed by not doing the surgery.
I agree with you. You know, it's the patients you turn away are probably more important than the patients that you do. You know, I had a dentist that came and he wanted me to do liposuction of his tummy. And I thought he would be better served by doing diet and exercise. He had atrial fibrillation and he was on anticoagulants. Mm-hmm. And he said, my cardiologist will give me an approval to go off my anticoagulants anytime I want for whatever I want. I said, you know what, your cardiologist may do that, but then you might have a stroke because atrial fibrillation, you know, can have clots there and it can go flying. And is it worthwhile to the risk involved to have a little liposuction at the time? And I said to him, no, it's not worth it. And I can't do it when you're on anticoagulants.
Right. When I, one of the things I talk to patients about, especially as we're getting closer to, you know, them making up their mind that they want to have a procedure or go ahead with a procedure, or if I'm trying to convince them that they're not a good candidate, one of the things I say about cosmetic surgery is it's unnecessary surgery. It's not like you have gallstones causing you pain and intra-abdominal situation, or it's not like you have a heart vessel that needs to be bypassed. We're talking about a procedure you want to have, but you don't absolutely have to have. So, you know, when you explain it in terms like that, people sometimes raise an eyebrow and say, well, don't you want to operate on me? I want to be safe. I want to make sure you have a good result. And for example, when you get a patient like that who has other, you know, medical conditions, as we call them, comorbidities, sometimes the best thing to do is not operate.
Exactly. I mean, I'll never forget, I had a man also who was very autistic. He was an artist, and he wanted to have a facelift and eyelids and brow lift. And, you know, he was telling me how he was going to be happy after the procedure. I said, you know, your happiness is more involved with how you feel about yourself than this procedure. I said, you know, if you want to be happy, go on vacation with your wife. Go take a cruise someplace. You know, you're going to be a little bit miserable for a few days after the surgery. And it's going to be a few weeks, better part of a month, before you look considerably better.
Yeah.
You know, so are you going to be happy after the surgery? Probably not. You know, people sometimes get depressed right after surgery, so if they have a psychiatrist take care of them, a psychologist, we do discuss the procedure with them. I'll never forget, I had a woman who came in. She thought she was the greatest candidate for facelift and everything else. And she may have been the best candidate, but I sent her for laboratories. And she said, do I have to have these laboratories? I said, yes, I'm not operating on you. You know, you don't look, you look okay, but, you know, I just need to see what's going on. I need at least a hematocrit. I need to know that you have a normal blood level. So I sent her for all these things, and it turned out she had renal failure, significant renal failure.
Goodness.
And then when I questioned her further, it turned out that she had manic depression, and she was on lithium for an extended period of time. And the lithium had caused the renal failure, but it had happened 2 years before, and it was stable. So I said, wait a minute, you know, let me talk to your psychiatrist, let me talk to your internist, and let me get to the bottom of this and then come into the office and we'll discuss it. So I spoke to her psychiatrist, spoke to her internist, and apparently she had stable renal failure. But, you know, I was going to do this in my surgical center in my office. In my surgery center in my office, I only do anesthesia risk ones or twos. Risk one, it means that they have no comorbidities. Anesthesia risk number two is someone who may have high blood pressure, but it's under control with medication or some other condition, a sugar problem, and they have normal sugar despite the fact they have diabetes. But a class three is somebody who has multiple medical problems, which he had, and some of them are not completely controlled and normal. So I just explained to her that, yes, I could do your surgery because you are stable at the moment, and according to all the doctors, but I can't do it under general anesthesia. I have to do it under local standby. I will not do. I will not allow them to give you general anesthesia because I think it's too great a risk. And I cannot do you in my office facility because you don't meet the criteria for my office facility. And she said, okay, doctor, whatever you think is best. And the anesthesiologist gave her a minimal amount of Versed, and I gave her local anesthesia. Mm-hmm. And she was comfortable enough for me to do the entire procedure. And she was so thrilled afterwards, you know, I tell you.
Yeah.
You know, some of these patients who know they're difficult problems and they don't really tell you and they're trying to hide things, you really got to make sure because yeah. You know, you've seen that before.
Sure. While we're on that topic, something related that is an extreme version of patient with an unrealistic expectation, you may have discussed this on your program before, body dysmorphic disorder. And that can be, boy, when you as a plastic surgeon don't recognize it, and these people sometimes can hide it pretty well, and you go ahead and operate on them, you find out after that, you know, boy, you want to talk about having to spend so much time with a patient.
Well, you're the chief now. I'm sure you'll see a few of those in the year that you'll be the chief. Because what happens is that anybody who has a patient who's unreasonable, you know, in terms of their, you know, after a result, we end up sending them to the chief to take a look at. You know?
Well, thank you. That's something to look forward to.
Because, you know, it's like not everybody understands the reality of what's happening. I try to spend an inordinate amount of time with people. Like for breast augmentation, I spend time with people finding out exactly what they think they want. You know, if they're an A cup, they want to be a C cup, a B cup. And then they don't want anybody to see the fact that I had a breast augmentation. They don't want their mother to know. They don't want their brothers to know. They want a minimum amount. Okay, fine. So let's try it on a tight bra. And I have a few hundred implants I try on with them to see what size fits them. And then after I can see a smile in the face with the implant size that's in the tight bra, I say, fine, let's go to the three-dimensional imaging machine and see what it looks like there. Mm-hmm. And then with the Vectra imaging machine, I then check it out with the different volumes and see if I can find the same volume or similar volume that they're happy with. And I note mm-hmm. the two numbers. And then we go into my office, and I sit down with their actual photographs that I've taken in the exam room initially. And we look at real before and afters that I've done to be able to compare their photographs to actual patients that I've been able to achieve a result for. And after those three things, if I can't get a solid feeling from the patient, I'm not operating under any circumstances.
Yeah. You know, I think over the years we all develop our sort of habits and our ways about, you know, having a cosmetic consultation with the patient. And speaking of breast augmentation, I've done it all where, you know, you take dozens of measurements and you get exact implant sizes, put them in a sports bra, then you have them put on a tight t-shirt. I used to, you'll find this interesting or kind of funny, I used to tell them, bring in a picture from Playboy magazine of what you would like to look like. Now, you know, we never promise a result based on a picture, but I'd have a patient come in and tell me, oh, I want to just be a B or full or small C cup. And they would bring in pictures of women with double D breasts. So see, it was a good way to identify, at least early on in my career, how to manage certain expectations and get them on the right page. And as you know, you know, we're up here on the East Coast, more conservative, but I have buddies and colleagues in Miami and in California. They've never put in a 300 or 350 cc implant. Never. They've
our
600
average size is 360 Jersey Metropolitan. Actually, nationally, I think it's like 360. My average is 337, I think, out of a few hundred implants. I actually gave a course on natural proportional breast augmentation at the Aesthetic Society.
Oh, nice.
Which I spent a lot of time preparing for. I reviewed all my cases. And I think nationally, I think there's a 20% rate of dissatisfaction mm-hmm. with size after breast augmentation. And I have a 1% incidence of patients who are dissatisfied with a implant that's too small. And I have a 0.2% where it's too big. So,
The advice I got from one of my mentors up at UMass, Dr. Rothkopf, who, you know, I just really tried to at least model my surgical technique and career after him, because he had so few unhappy patients and so few complications after surgery. And, you know, after spending 2 years with him, I realized what it was. And it was patient selection and managing expectations. But he probably turned away more cases than some of his colleagues up there. But he also didn't have, you know, to spend all this time with a dissatisfied patient. Rarely did I, in the 2 years I was there, did I remember him having a dissatisfied patient. But one thing he told me about breast augmentation was that he had never had a patient come back and complain that they were too big. But he has had a few come back and say that they were too small, that you didn't augment enough. So I think in the scheme of things, if you're going to err, you err a little bit larger than smaller. But again, every patient's different. So you have to really, some patients you have to spend more than an hour with them just trying to get the size right.
I spent an hour at least with every patient. And then I have them come back again. And I have them try on the implant size again. Yeah. And I go over to three-dimensional imaging with them again if necessary. But I'll spend a good close on an hour. They'll be in my office a minimum of 2 hours.
Yeah. You know, now I've been at this 15 years, a little less than yourself. But, you know, you come to realize that sometimes tissues don't stretch, or a muscle, the pec muscle won't stretch to what you thought it would based on your preoperative exam. I mean, you know, we've done hundreds of these, and sometimes
you can't be a purist either. You know, you can't put every implant underneath the muscle. Some muscles are not amenable to subpectoral augmentation. Not every patient can have a dual plane. Some of them have to be subglandular. And there are patients who I'll tell straight up, you know, I cannot do this subpectoral. You require a subglandular augmentation. That's only about 2% of cases, though. But there are, you know, tuberous breasts or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll explain to them, like, certain shaped breasts would require certain additional procedures. And those additional procedures are going to take with it a loss of sensation. So they have to understand that with that procedure, they will have loss of sensation. Most of the time, if you're doing an inframammary fold incision, you're not going to have loss of sensation. They're going to be fine. Mm-hmm. You know, and 99% of the time that's the case. But if you have a tuberous breast, you know, you have to do something with that to make it look normal.
Yeah, those are some of the most challenging cases.
And the expectations are very great there.
Yeah,
especially the pediatric cases with asymmetry. Mm-hmm. They want to be normal. Mm-hmm. And they have a strong desire to be normal. And, you know, people publish their best cases out of hundreds that they do. And then patients will see this one case which is perfect, and they think they're going to go to this surgeon, and they're going to be perfect also, which is unrealistic.
Yeah, boy, so many thoughts are going through my head right now. So a couple of things. I think there is a trend that more surgeons are placing implants subglandular or on top of the muscle than what's being reported in the literature. Just anecdotally, I know I've talked to a couple of people around, and we were trained in the era, the last 15 years, that under the muscle is the way to go, because it camouflages the implant, less rippling, gives you another layer, et cetera, et cetera. But as you know, sometimes that pec muscle, even if you free it, on the medial border, you still can have a goofy result with animation.
We don't want any goofy results.
We don't want
patients looking normal, being happy. You know, one of the things I see is, like, when I have those implants in the bra, and I tell them, now, if you were to go to the beach and that would be your size, would you be happy? Would you be confident going to the beach? And when they give me that smile back and say, yeah, doctor, this is what I want. And I know I've hit it, because, you know, it's all about them feeling comfortable in their bodies. And, you know, they have an issue with a specific thing, and we want to identify what that thing is, and we want to fix it, and we want to make it better for them. It doesn't mean that we want to make it better. We have to make it better for them, what their idea is, what their need is. You know, it's funny. I just saw this movie called The Book Club. And Jane Fonda was in it. And she's 80 years old. And she looked spectacular. She looked like she was in her 30s. And she readily admits that she is looking in her 30s now. She's looking spectacular because of plastic surgery.
Of course.
And, you know, some people look at people and they say, oh, my God, you have fantastic body. And she goes, yes, I work on it. I do special things, but plastic surgery definitely has aided me. And one of the things that she did was appearances she had quoted from the DailyMail.com. This is an article. And they said, Jane Fonda gets eye-popping boob job at age 76. But it's just for her role as a grieving wife in a new trailer for this movie, Where I Leave You. And apparently, she shows off her breasts in this movie, and her son sees it by accident, and it becomes an embarrassing situation for her son. She had no problem with it in the movie, but that was it. And then, you know, one of her best friends, I forget her name, she has quite a few friends, and that's part of her feeling that she's able to be so happy is that she has so many friends in the industry that help her out. Mm-hmm. I think the kid that plays it was Judd in the movie, and Bateman's character was involved. Somebody, Megyn Kelly, the other day asked Jane Fonda. She had a new movie out called The Book Club, and Megyn Kelly starts asking her about her plastic surgery in the middle of everything. You know, it's not about, we're not here to talk about my plastic surgery, we're here to talk about my new movie. What are you doing, Megan? You know, she was like so taken aback by Megyn Kelly. Megyn Kelly can be inappropriate with people, as he was, I think. Yeah. You know what? She was right on with Trump during the presidency debates. I thought she really nailed him about his roles with women and stuff. You know, one of the interesting things was at age 80, she looked better than she did at age 76. I noticed she had significant jowls, significant problems with her neck at age 76 in that movie. And now in this movie, The Book Club, she has no jowls and she has no neck. So she's had another facelift. It's not that she's had one facelift or one plastic surgical procedure. For a woman at 80 years of age to look as good as she does, she's had multiple procedures. My oldest patient that had a facelift was 84. And you'd say, oh my God, all you're into it is money, of plastic surgery than an 84-year-old, but she was sent by her cardiologist. She had macular degeneration, so she couldn't see well. She had a boyfriend 12 years younger than her that was driving around. She had to look young to keep the boyfriend. So, of course, we had to take care of her. Now, we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about the 8 things that Jane Fonda says are important in terms of keeping young and staying young. We're going to talk about those 8 things, and then we're also going to talk about some new cancer-fighting blueprint that's in the news this week, and also some things from the new journal and the aesthetic journal. So stay tuned and come back and ask us any questions you may have about plastic surgery at 973-267-9687 WMTR Radio. Stay tuned. Thank you so much. Bye.
Whether it's extra fat and skin around your midsection or lines and wrinkles in your face that weren't there a few years ago, Weinstein Plastic Surgery Center knows how important it is to look and feel your best. Located in Chester, New Jersey, Dr. Weinstein is a conservative, board-certified plastic surgeon who's a recognized expert of cosmetic, aesthetic, plastic, and reconstructive surgery, facial rejuvenation, and breast and body contouring. If you're thinking of a procedure to help you repair an area of your face, breasts, or body that you are not happy with, visit a doctor that has a proven track record of satisfied patients. Dr. Weinstein has been in Chester for over 25 years and seen over 30,000 patients. You can trust Dr. Weinstein to help you look the best you can. He's an on-staff plastic surgeon at Morristown Memorial, and at Weinstein Plastic Surgery Center, he can help you with your facelift, tummy tuck, breast augmentation, or liposuction to achieve natural-looking proportional results. Visit DocWeinstein.com. That's DocWeinstein.com.
Hi, Doc Weinstein here. Looking forward to hearing from you or seeing you or helping you achieve your personal goals.
You owe over $10,000 in back taxes. You've called every tax firm out there. They all say the same thing, making promises they never keep, and you're sick of it. What you really need is a new start on your back taxes. If you're faced with garnishments, levies, audits, or years of unfiled tax returns, we'll fight to get you the new start you deserve. Call 1-800-487-7014. Our New Start program will stop collection efforts, remove any liens the IRS has in place, and help you reduce your back taxes by as much as 80%. That's right, 80%. Don't wait until another tax season ends and another year of penalties and interest are added to your balance. If you owe at least $10,000 to the IRS and need a new start on your back taxes, call 1-800-487-7014. That's 1-800-487-7014. Let the professionals at Coast One Financial Group fight to get you the new start you deserve. Again, that's 1-800-487-7014.
Check out dining deals at WMTRAM.com to purchase half-price certificates to some of New Jersey's best restaurants. This week, we feature Arthur's Tavern on Speedwell Avenue in Moores Plains. Don't get caught in the Father's Day rush. Bring Dad into Arthur's before Father's Day so he won't have to wait to enjoy his perfectly cooked steak. And Arthur's has a number of steaks for him to choose from. Whether it's something smaller like an 8-ounce to an enormous 48-ounce steak, Dad will love it. Plus, choose from a variety of cuts like New York strip and Delmonico, and rotating specialty cuts like filet mignon, ribeye, porterhouse, and T-bone. Be sure to check arthurstavern.com to see what's available that day. They're also not just delicious steaks and burgers. Try their farmer's onion soup or fresh seafood that's delivered daily. Whether you're celebrating with your superstar graduate or taking Dad out for his favorite meal, Arthur's is the perfect spot to make the day extra special. Arthur's Tavern in Moores Plains, voted Morris County's number one steakhouse year after year. Try them for half price. Get $100 in certificates for just $50 with dining deals at WMTRAM.com.
Broadcasting live from the Hilltop Nissan Studios. Classic Oldies, WMTR Morristown, a Beasley Media Group station.
So we're back here at Nips and Tucks, and we're talking about some interesting aspects of Jane Fonda. You know, in the book club we saw this, she was 80, Jane Fonda is really 80 years of age, and I think she looks only about in the 40s. She's been quoted as saying, plastic surgery bought me a decade. I mean, I like helping young women be less afraid of getting closer to death, being Jane Fonda. At that time, she was 77. I'm very youthful, and I have passion. And she thinks it's very important. And she was very excited about getting her baggy eyelids, neck, and chin wrinkles fixed. And she cautions people. She says, the danger with surgery is you say, oh, this is good. Let me do more. It can be an addiction. And we've seen people who are addicted to plastic surgery. We just have to calm them down a little bit. I mean, Lily Tomlin chided her, you know, when she was, she said she looks like she's 50 years old. And then, Lily Tomlin says, I think that was before your facelift. In other words, how she was feeling. And Daniel Fontana wrote, something about, Jane Fonda says, certain, there are eight things that are important to stay young. And one of them is, don't abuse your body. In terms of abusing your body, don't drink excessive alcohol. Don't drink alcohol, period. And no smoking is number two. And she also, you know, had those, exercise videos. And she says, never stop moving. You know, it's very important. And the slower you are, the older you feel. And, you know, I always say I try to take 10,000 steps a day, sometimes 12,000. I go biking regularly because I want to keep my body moving. I think if you exercise regularly, your dermis is thicker. There was a study done by the Italians that shows the dermis is thicker in people that exercise regularly. They did it on female butts. I think only Italians could do a study like that. And then, you know, 45 minutes of exercise is great, but 30 minutes is good for cardiac resistance exercising. And don't forget, you are what you eat. You know, avoid sugars, salt, you know, have colorful vegetables, she says, and have lean meat and have a multivitamin. I say have fish instead of meat. And make the right choices. You know, if you're going to have plastic surgery, make sure you get it from somebody who's a specialist in plastic surgery as opposed to some make-believe surgeon. And she always said she felt pretty terrific, but she always looked tired. And by looking tired was that tired looking on the eyes. And she felt afterwards she no longer looked like the tired woman. I had a woman in today that I did uppers and lowers on who was also complaining about that tired look. And I know in a few weeks she's going to be happy. She doesn't have that tired look anymore.
Yeah, I think that's the one point to make about aesthetic surgery or cosmetic surgery of the face it shouldn't look like you had something done. You should look refreshed. You should look like you just came back from vacation. Probably the best compliment one of your facelift or eyelid patients could have is that people think that I'm, you know,
look natural.
Looking natural. I'm exercised. You look rested, you know.
Doctor's wife that came in on Monday, she said, her friend said, and her husband also said that she looked herself again. You know, which is only 3 weeks after the surgery, she looked herself again because her jowls were gone and her neck was gone and she had a mojo. Really?
Hey, Larry, if I can go back 1 second.
Sure, go ahead.
When you were talking about walking 10,000 steps and trying to stay moving and be fit, my daughter just got back from a semester in Rome. And my wife and I went over and visited her 1 week. And I noticed something very curious. Of course, we walked everywhere and, there was great food everywhere, mostly pasta and pizza, but I also noticed that there were no morbidly obese patients. I did not see any morbidly obese patients there that were, of course, native Italians. There may have been a couple Americans there, but I don't think
they have those restaurants that are all you can eat. There's no such thing that,
of course.
Yeah,
that,
you know, when you eat, you sit, you eat a little bit, and then they sit and they eat
a little bit
more.
They eat well, and you know, I think it's a walking city, walking culture. I think also they don't have drive-through food like we have here. And another thing that really took me by surprise, and as I say this, we each have a cup of Starbucks in front of us. They did not have to-go coffee. I went into a coffee shop and I asked for a coffee. For takeaway, as they say, that's their term for takeout. And he handed me a plastic cup that you drink water out of with coffee in it, no lid. And I looked at him, and it was such a revelation to me. You will not see people in Rome walking around with coffee cups. So
it's not etiquette.
It's just not part of their culture. Yeah, they sit down, they enjoy their meal, they enjoy their coffee, their afternoon snack, whatever it may be. But, you know, made me realize that probably the biggest thing is, as you say, is moving. You don't necessarily have to join a gym. You don't have to be, you know, in some kind of choreo fit club or anything. Just walk.
Keep that moving. There's no question. And you know what? The other thing that Jane Fonda said, there were six things she said, was foster your relationships, your friends, your family, your partner. And stronger relationships are the strongest keys to remaining youthful. To stay young at heart, you have to have love in your life. And it's also important for her to have woman friends. I have male friends. I go play golf with my buddies. And I make sure to go out with my friends. One of my best friends is my roommate from college. And I see him regularly. We go biking on the west side of New York once in a while. One of my other best friends, also from college, Mike Rothkopf, he's a metabolic specialist. We play golf together. He's a good guy. And you have to have starch in your spine. And she says, I can't say it, but Jane Fonda, I'm going to quote, she says, don't overlook your sex life. You know, and I'm married for 38 years. My wife is a marriage therapist, so I never complain about these things. When you get to that midlife thing, you don't want to decline into decrepitude, is what she says. And it's no longer valid, she says, looking at aging as an ascending staircase. With your well-being as spirit, soul, wisdom, and ability to be truly intimate and a life with intention. Youth starts from within. With age, two-thirds has to do with your spirit and variety. And she's happier now than she's ever been when she was younger. She said the good old days are the real good old days are today and now. And I agree with her. I think that, you know, you talk about certain people go into depression, even 16-year-olds go into depression, and Kate Spade recently went into a depression, and unfortunately she didn't have the friends and support that she needed and the crutch to be able to bring up her spirits. And I think you have to be around people who bring up your spirits and seek out people that bring up your spirits and make sure that you maintain those relationships in your life. I mean, I have a roommate from medical school. He lives in Florida. I still go to his house in Florida. He still comes up here and visits me. We still get together. He wants me to come down to North Carolina by his lake house. You know, and you know, he's been through some trials and tribulations, and we can talk about those things. You know, you don't necessarily talk about it with everybody. You know, you talk about those people who you know have your soul and have your back.
I'd have to say I agree with most of those, basically all those things that Jane Fonda said are, you know, keys to having a youthful, happy life. And on the topic of friends, which is odd because, you know, the plastic surgery show, but I think in this complicated, difficult age that we live in, with all the negative stuff and the things going on in the world, boy, if you have a good set of friends that you see regularly, you get together and you socialize, and you know, you can have a few good laughs with, you can really let your hair down, I think that goes a long way to keeping you healthy. We have, my wife and I, we have beach friends that happen to be up in Massachusetts because that's where we lived for 10 years, and we only see them in the summer, pretty much. Occasionally, after the kids are in school, we might get together once, you know, during the school year. But essentially, we've only seen these people for the 3 months of summer for the last 14 years. And I got to tell you, as soon as the summer ends, we look forward to the next summer already, because we know that we'll be back with them, and we pick up where we left off, and we have, you know.
So you go to Martha's Vineyard?
No, it's on Cape Cod. It's in Hyannis, Massachusetts. Oh. Yeah, and that's our happy place. And I think everybody needs a happy place wherever
they live. Do you rent a house there? Or?
Yeah, we have a little place up there from my days in Cambridge.
Nice.
Yeah.
So. Tell you, I always knew you knew how to live, Al.
Now, if I just had a plane to get me there, it would knock off the 5-hour, 300-mile ride each
Look,
way.
That I mean, make every weekend. John Kennedy Jr. had a plane also. We don't want you going that way. Just drive. If you get tired, let your wife drive. You know, it's like my father used to say, you know, when you're driving, the most important thing to do is realize when you're tired and pull over and rest.
Absolutely.
So I don't know how many police officers have stopped me on the side of the road when I'm napping and saying, you know, knocking on the window, what are you doing there? I said, look, officer, I was tired. I pulled over. I'm taking a rest. You should pull off the road and, you know, at the next exit or something. Officer, God knows when the next exit was. What, is it better for me to crash in a side rail and take a nap on the side of the road? He goes, you don't do drugs? I would do drugs. I'm a doctor. I'm not going to do drugs. I prescribe drugs, and I'm not giving you a prescription, officer. I don't care what you say. You know, so, you know, it's interesting. I get the Aesthetic Journal every month, and in this month's Aesthetic Journal for June, they're talking about three-dimensional imaging of the face, and they talk about the vector imaging versus the other machines for three-dimensional imaging. And the three-dimensional imaging is really good for rhinoplasty in terms of explaining to somebody what you can do with a rhinoplasty, because it goes into the details of the nose and things. And they compared it to the 3MD face machine and Arctic EVA, and they found that the Vectra machine was as good as any of them, if not better. And it was very effective at being able to explain to a patient what they might look like. And I find it's very good. I had the three-dimensional imaging machine 30 years ago. I had the first three-dimensional imaging machine that came out in my office, and I find this new machine, it was two-dimensional. This is a new three-dimensional imaging machine, and I think it's so much better.
Yeah, but today's computing power, I can imagine.
Then they're talking about, there was an article in the other aesthetic journal, the International Aesthetic Journal, where they're talking about three-dimensional modeling. Actually, it was in the White Journal, the PRS Journal, mm-hmm. This month. And they're thinking that three-dimensional modeling, where you have 3D models that you can print out, may be helpful in terms of explaining to the patient where you're going with their procedure and what they actually look like. Because people really don't see themselves. Even if you have a two-dimensional photograph and you have 8 different photographs, they still may not understand the dimensions of their issue.
Right. There's a lot of things about the face, of course, the body as well, but particularly the face that are very unique to everyone. Everyone's facial recognition of themselves and of others is can be very variable. As you say, sometimes people don't really see what's there. They see what they want to see. One of the most interesting things I think I learned when I was at Lenox Hill for 3 months doing, you know, predominantly cosmetic surgery with some of the biggies in New York, was that we all have a short side of our face and a long side. And when I tell that to people who are not in the medical field, they're like, what are you talking about? And I said, just watch any news program, watch any TV shows, and study everyone's face. We all have a short side and a long side. And once you start looking for it, it'll drive you nuts because some people's is very exaggerated, that one side of their face is shorter than the other. And, you know, sometimes I find myself, like, shaking my head, like, stop looking for this. But it's something that we all have. And I think that was one of the most interesting things I learned when I was...
That was funny. So. Like, just yesterday, I had a patient in the office who's, like, 38 years of age now. He's divorced, and he recently lost 60 pounds. And he's going to have a tummy tuck, and I'm going to do some work for his gynecomastia, a little areola elevation, and liposuction of the flanks, you know. So when I was discussing, and he has a huge nevus on his tummy that I'm taking out, because, and that's the thing I want to do most, is get rid of that nevus. I hate those pigmented nevus that are suspicious. But when I looked at his face, I noticed that one eye and one cheek was significantly larger than the other. Mm. And patients, whenever I do a facelift or eyelids, I always tell patients that one side is different than the other. And they say, how do you know, doctor? I said, because I can see it. And here's your photographs. You can see, like, this eyelid is baggier than the other eyelid. This cheekbone is stronger than the other cheekbone. Mm-hmm. Why is that, doctor? Why is that the case? What did I do wrong? Am I sleeping on the wrong side all the time? I said, no. It was right at fertilization. That egg, when that sperm hit that egg, the first time it divided, that division was slightly different. And because there was a slight division, maybe it was 0.5% of 0.1%, that predicated that the entire body on that side is a little bit different than the other side. And you and I can do everything in my power to make you as perfect as possible and as equal as possible, but I can't make you equal. I can't do it. When everything is said and done, you will see some slight differences in whatever result I have. And I will agree with you. I cannot make you exactly the same because your skin is different on these different sides, your bone is different on the different sides, your muscle is different on those sides, and your fascia is different on those sides, and the way you express yourself is sometimes different on those different sides, so that ultimately the result will be slightly different. You and I will probably see it because you'll be looking in the mirror every day, God knows, several times a day, but most people will not perceive the difference.
You know, there was they did this thing with this mirror. Do you remember that reversed your image of your face for yourself? In other words, right was left, left was right. Because when you look into the mirror, a mirror, you're looking at the reverse image.
Sure.
So it's not what the world sees you as, all right? So they had this mirror, and when they gave it to people, they really, some of them freaked out because they almost didn't recognize themselves because something simple like your hair part was on the opposite side of what you thought it was on. Because again, when you look in the mirror, everything's reversed. Think of when you're driving a car and you look in the rearview mirror, everything is reversed. Well, same thing with your face. You're used to seeing your reflection in the mirror, but you're not used to seeing what your face looks like from another's point of view. And they actually had a mirror that did this, and I think they were actually selling, the company was selling them on Amazon, but anyway, I had never tried it. I always wanted to get one of these mirrors, but somehow I think you hold it up to half your face and it, you know, it reflected the image back the way the world sees you, and people were really,
you know, it's funny, in the Vectra image machine, you can actually take one side and duplicate it so that you have two rights or two lefts for whatever the individual patient is discussing it about. And I don't see any significant improvement when I do that in any patient, you know, having the two exactly the same. And also in this journal article, in June's journal, they talk about three-dimensional imaging and breast measurements. And they're saying that it's good for the certain measurements, like from the sternum to the nipple and from the sternum to the, from the midline to the nipple. Mm-hmm. But from the inframammary fold to the nipple, there's too much fuzziness for the computer to pick it up exactly, so that the actual measurement is best done by a human than the machine. So humans are definitely more perceptible in terms of the breast than the machine is.
Well, one thing about that last measurement, if I may, the nipple to inframammary fold measurement. I think it's variable also on how taut you make the skin, because as you know, there's elastin in the skin, so you could get the skin to stretch a little bit or a lot depending on how much tension you put it on. So I think what's important there is that the same person in your office is doing the measurements on every case. That would be yourself.
I do all the measures of my patients. Absolutely. I make sure I put my thumb down on the inferior fold and pick it up, and it's loosely examined. And I do it on both sides, and I do circumferential measurements on every patient, because I think people don't realize their proportions. I'll never forget, I had a woman come in. She was 32, 28, 38. She had fairly large hips, and she wanted to get a breast augmentation. She came with a mom. And the mother was shaking her head. She going, oh, she doesn't need to get a breast augmentation. She needs to lose weight. She's got a big butt. I said, look, she is 5'4". And 115 pounds. She does not need to lose any weight. She's perfect weight for her height. I said, and by the way, how much do you weigh? She said, well, how tall are you? I'm 4'11". How much do you weigh? I weigh 87 pounds. I say, you're underweight. And you should not be telling your daughter that. Mm-hmm. And let's look at this. Here I am, which is in a tight bra. She has these try-on implants. Doesn't she look better and more proportional? Let me measure this. This measures 35 inches now. So that's more proportional to her waist. I said, wouldn't it be better if she's more proportional? She would get sick trying to lose that butt. And she has a beautiful butt. And stop talking to her like that. So the girl ended up having the breast augmentation. And then the mom came in 6 months later and had breast augmentation. And she looked healthier. She gained a little weight. So I always relish the fact when people bring in their parents or someone that loves them, because they're really, the parents or whoever it is really expressing what they feel is best for the patient. And sometimes as doctors, we have to intervene. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that way, Al?
I agree. And, you know, it's funny that sometimes the dynamic that comes in with, you know, a patient, who they bring in, a spouse, a girlfriend, a sister. I tell you a funny thing that happened to me once. I was meeting a patient in the holding area, about to go back for surgery. It was one of my patients up in Boston, and she's having a mommy makeover, some breast elevation with implants and a tummy tuck. And at the very last second, we're about to roll back, she grabs my arm and says, doctor, now remember, don't tell my husband after surgery what we did. I mean, I froze in my tracks. I said, what do you mean? You didn't tell him? She said, no. If he doesn't know, just tell him you did some women's surgery down there. And I said, but I'm not a gynecologist. I can't say. She said, whatever you do, don't tell him what you did. Talk about an uncomfortable situation. And that's the last time that has happened to me, because I make it a point now to always ask patients, like, how does your spouse or how does your family feel about this? And it was that one case that, you know, when I realized everybody has different relationships with their...
It's true. I mean, sometimes I've had a patient come in with her boyfriend for the consultation, and for the pre-op, she brings her husband. So, you know, we can't say anything to anybody anytime without their permission. Yeah. You know, we're sworn to secrecy. And people tell me stories all the time, even when I'm doing Botox and fillers. I'll never forget this woman telling me about her husband, how terrible he was, and how she had this boyfriend and that boyfriend and the other one. And I'm saying, all right, you know, but no, fast forward 15 years, and she's not the happy person that she was when she was having all these boyfriends. I don't know. You know, I guess different time, different strokes for different folks. I mean, they certain things make certain people happy at certain times, you know? I think there was a article about the big issue now with Mark Jewell and William Adams. They're talking about different ways of making breast implant surgery safer. And I mean, I have such a low incidence of capsular contracture. I have zero incidence of infection in all my 30 years in practice for breast augmentation. But they're coming up with additional things of no-touch technique, where we use a sleeve to put the implants in. And there were sleeves before the new sleeves that they have that we used. And I always never let anybody touch those implants before I put them in, and always had a gloved hand and washed them with antibiotic solutions and Betadine. Then there was a period of time where Betadine was verboten. You didn't want Betadine on the implants. And now they've turned around, and they realize Betadine is an antifungal, antibacterial, antiviral, and it actually is better for some cases. And my friend Jack Fisher in Tennessee also talks about using chlorhexidine, which is a chlorine-based, you know, which is similar to Betadine in terms of its action. So I'm very excited about doing that. So
we all have our voodoo, as we say, as to, you know, how to handle the implants and what solution to wash them. But, you know, all those studies that were done, I believe the one thing that they realize is you have to have a meticulously dry pocket that even a little bit of blood can lead to a microinfection. And then, again, not a significant infection with, you know, pus forming and having to have the implant removed, but a microinfection that then creates that scar that turns into a capsular contracture.
How do you feel about labioplasty?
I think for certain young women, it can be life-changing for them. You know, I can't say I see a lot of it, but I see a few cases every year. And I tell you, they're really happy patients when they decide to have it done, as you can imagine.
Have you done the wedge excision?
Yes, for like a pie. You take a pie. Yeah. Yep. And actually, it's funny that I learned that technique from, I believe it was when I was in Boston. It was a surgery resident who had rotated with somebody. And up until then, I had done, you know, pretty much a straight line excision with a long, you know, as you can imagine, long running over and over suture. And this resident had said, "Have you ever tried this?" And at that time, I had not read any journal articles about it or, you know, been to any courses on it. And sure enough, I tried it in a few patients. It can really,
Al, I can't believe it. We are almost at the end. We only have 2 minutes left. And I think one of the things that has been exciting to me is this. There was an article about rejuvenated face with suspension sutures. Mm-hmm. And I think that I've had a half a dozen cases I've done since the beginning of the year with just suspension sutures. I use the Mint Lift and other types of sutures. And the patients, according to this article, said that 96% of patients saw a tangible difference and that they only had a slight amount of discomfort, said was manageable, 89%. And 89%, they only had minor side effects, just a little bit of bruising and swelling.
Are you talking about the type that of was, suspension sutures that are placed externally and pulled through the skin, like with the tongs?
Externally, yeah, just put it right through and just... Yeah.
I think it's very big in the Far East.
Huge, huge. And this is an article from Korea, actually. Yep. And they're talking about that, I think, Wu's study, which showed that 85% of patients request additional sutures at 2 years, pretty well holds, even at this point in time. And I have the dissolvable PDO sutures that are pretty utilizing. And there's certain cases where it probably is maybe better. Like we consider it in patients with mild skin laxity and men seeking facial rejuvenation who want to avoid a potential facial hair distortion. Mm-hmm. And people who are contraindicated to surgery with vascular compromise, hypertension, diabetics, or patients with severe tobacco abuse, because we know they have such a high complication rate with facelifts. And I think that you can improve the profile. I mean, it's similar in terms of results to fillers. And then my friend from Newport Beach came out with an article about filler, and they're talking about filling it in the location just above the nasolabial fold, in the nasal jugal area. Apparently, that's the best place to put a little filler in because it gives the most facial rejuvenation purposes. Next week, we're going to have a very interesting plastic surgeon with me, a Dr. Paul Figlia, who's a plastic surgeon now for about 20 years in West Orange. He's agreed to come on the show next week. And the following week, we have the president of our Plastic Surgery Society, Dr. Herbschman, will be coming on. And I believe sometime in July, we're going to have Dr. Karen Brinelson, who's going to be the president of the Morris County Medical Society, also a plastic surgeon. So we have things to look forward to here at Nips and Tucks. It's been a pleasure having the show today, and we hope that you enjoyed the show. And if you're interested in having plastic surgery, Dr. Koh's office is in Morristown, my office in Chester, New Jersey, and we are both welcoming new patients. And we don't reject everybody. Only patients who are unrealistic. And we hope that we can find you, have realistic expectations, and also have realistic results.
Thanks for having me, Larry.
Take care.
Whether it's extra fat and skin around your midsection or lines and wrinkles in your face that weren't there a few years ago, Weinstein Plastic Surgery Center knows how important it is to look and feel your best. Located in Chester, New Jersey, Dr. Weinstein is a conservative, board-certified plastic surgeon who's a recognized expert of cosmetic, aesthetic, plastic, and reconstructive surgery, facial rejuvenation, and breast and body contouring. If you're thinking of a procedure to help you repair an area of your face, breasts, or body that you are not happy with, visit a doctor that has a proven track record of satisfied patients. Dr. Weinstein has been in Chester for over 25 years and seen over 30,000 patients. You can trust Dr. Weinstein to help you look the best you can. He's an on-staff plastic surgeon at Morristown Memorial, and at Weinstein Plastic Surgery Center, he can help you with your facelift, tummy tuck, breast augmentation, or liposuction to achieve natural-looking proportional results. Visit DocWeinstein.com. That's DocWeinstein.com.
Hi, Doc Weinstein here. Looking forward to hearing from you, or seeing you, or helping you achieve your personal goals.
You've got a hard-earned home, a sweet HDTV, a pretty cool pet, but no life insurance? We understand. You know you need life insurance and should probably already have it. But maybe you think it's too expensive or too difficult to find the right plan. And nobody likes sitting through a medical exam. Don't worry. Globe Life makes it easy. Call us toll-free at 1-877-846-7701 and choose from plans to fit just about any budget. You can apply online, over the phone. No medical exam or waiting period required. And with a no-risk money-back guarantee, there's pretty much nothing to lose. You can't predict the future, but you can protect it. And Globe Life makes it easier than ever to take care of what matters most. No bells, no whistles, just life insurance. That's Globe Life. Call us today at 1-877-846-7701. That's 1-877-846-7701. Call now.
It started with a bunch of kids harmonizing on the street corner. It is doo-wop music. Hi, this is Alan Davidstein. Every Friday night from 7 to 10, it's Doo-Wop Drive. 3 hours of what I know to be the greatest music ever recorded. Doo-Wop Drive, Friday, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time on AM 1250 WMTR.
Doo-Wop Drive is brought to you by the Ultimate Doo-Wop Show on Saturday, June 23rd at the Beacon Theater. Starring Lou Christie, Chase Eagles Tokens, The Coasters, Joey D, The Marvelettes, Willie Winfield and the Harpones, Shades of Blue, and more. Get tickets at Ticketmaster.com.
Join us next week for more sound advice, Tuesday at 7:30. Nip and Tuck with Doc Weinstein on Classic Oldies WMTR. The preceding program was paid for by sponsors of Weinstein Plastic Surgery. The views and opinions expressed are not those of the staff and management of WMTR. As always, it is advisable to consult a physician before making a major medical decision.